The Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC Houston Breakdown Show. From fun fights to gunfights, this game plays for keeps.
Hot air hangs like a dead man from a white oak tree. People sitting on porches thinking how things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. Dark night. It's a dark night.
What is up, you savages? This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, a podcast that focuses on high-level MMA. And I'm your host, Dan Tom, analyst and writer for FlowCombat.com. Today, or should I say tonight, we're going to be breaking down UFC Houston. Gambling techniques, yes, and of course my usual technical analysis as I kind of parlay that to the medium that hopefully you're enjoying, because I'm enjoying doing this. As far as the audio version, yes, 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 you can find my written versions, not forgetting what got me to the dance, at MixedMartialAnalyst.com. The big ones, yes, of course, will be at FlowCombat.com. Pay-per-views, numbered events, big showcase, Fox cards, etc. But like I said, with juggling the format, we're only kind of doing the big fights there. And of course, my other analysis work, submission underground, etc. there as well. But Flow, like me, is really receptive, really interactive with the MMA scene, from the fans to the fighters, and pride themselves on that. So just like I'm receptive, so are they. So if you want to hear more of me, believe me, I would not complain. Reach out to Flow, tag me, let your opinions be heard. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of Twitter and all this stuff, right? We can let our opinions be heard. And with that being said, that's how the Protect Your Neck Podcast came your way. Because I'm like, you know what? People want to hear the opinions heard. They like the audio version. I like listening to audio versions of many of things, whether we're talking about movies, martial arts, or any art of the above, no matter what your definition of it is. Hey, let's get it out there. So just like I can get my stuff out there, as you're listening to right now, you can get your opinion out there. Go ahead and tag me. With any opinions you have for this show, any feedback or anything like that, anything you want to see more or less of, you know, aside from me, you know, obviously you want to see less of, but we will try to get some more, guests and stuff. On a serious note, I got a lot of positive feedback, as I was hoping, with guys like Angelo Reyes or the top five, which was fun, with Jordan Killian, who we'll definitely have back on. I was on recently, a couple episodes ago. I was supposed to plug it last time. Not supposed to, but I wanted to, at least because I really like Half the Battle, hashtag Half the Battle. Shout out to Daniel Levy, was on there talking fights with him, which was really fun. If you want another reference point, because again, I like using that word reference point. That's what this is. That's why I'm not charging you for any of my content. That's why my content is and always will be free, because I'm just a reference point. I'm trying to bring more of the technical side. But if you want the gaming side with the technical side and just an overall knowledgeable side of reference points, go ahead and add half the battle. Subscribe to that. Because not only do you have my man Daniel Levy, shout out to him, but you also have Sean Carey Tattoo, who is awesome. I really like his takes, and he really has interesting angles and stuff, how he wants to look at things. So yeah, definitely a shout out to those guys, and thanks for having me on, Daniel. Check that out. We're gonna move on though. We're gonna jump right in here. Let's get to the brass tacks, the meat and potatoes. Yes, UFC Houston, and often like cards in Texas, close to the border or in Mexico. I mean, you really can't just take a card to Texas without a gunfight. And UFC Houston doesn't have names, but it has itself a plenty of gunfights. So 3 minutes and 47 seconds in, let's jump into the first gunfight, shall we? That's going to be Khalil Roundtree versus Daniel Jolly. Now, Daniel Jolly, we have not seen since Max Holloway versus Charles Oliveira. And the reason why I know that is because any of the hardcores following my work, I've been breaking down fights for a minute, kind of off Mixed Martial Analyst and off scene. But officially, if you go to Mixed Martial Analyst Archives, we go back for a minute, but yeah, you'll see there, Saskatoon, Holloway versus Oliveira is amongst the first card there listed. Daniel Jolly, though, unfortunately, real inactive guy. He only fights like once a year, and he missed that tradition because, well, his last fight, aforementioned, was in 2015. He only had one fight then, only had one fight in 2014. Etc. He wasn't really too active. Comes from more traditional martial arts base. Training in Texas, fighting on those local shows, and he is fighting somebody who is who I'm familiar. Hold on one second. Let me at least shoot some odds out here for you. We'll be a little better this time. Excuse me. Daniel Jolly is the underdog at +135 against Khalil Roundtree. -155 favorite. This is a homer pick, so really, you should really, not much technical analysis to say first off, and you shouldn't take mine seriously, because I go way back with Khalil, not as far back, but close to as far back as you've heard my buddy Brian, one of my best buds there, at BR14N. You hear him on many of After Party editions. Me and Brian were, singers in hardcore bands once upon a time in the punk rock hardcore scene. And a young Khalil Roundtree was amongst that scene, about, 300 pounds overweight, not knocking him. This is self-admitted from him, and props to him because we see the monster he is now. But yeah, Khalil was a shy, soft-spoken, overweight dude, but into the music scene, and saw him in amongst many a mosh pits back at the old Rockin' Java here in Las Vegas and many other venues that we would attend. Great dude. Maybe I'll post a picture later, we keep the same friendships. And we actually did a little Pulp Fiction Quentin Tarantino theme. A bunch of us ended up doing a bunch of Quentin Tarantino costumes for a Halloween party. So there's some fun pictures of there that maybe I'll post of me and Khalil. But that being said, more than enough to avoid my advice here. This is a homer pick. I got Roundtree in the first round, although Khalil, my man, I love you, and you train with a great underrated gym, by the way, Syndicate MMA. Your ground game has been troublesome in your fights, and that's no secret. You don't need me to say that, but Daniel Jolly, although he's not the best ground practitioner, he can pose some problems there. He is competent enough. Noteworthy, Daniel Jolly, although inactive, been training at ATT this camp. Not just training there, spent a weekend there, had a cup of coffee, but did a 10 to 12 week serious camp there. So worth noting. Hopefully Roundtree has those improvements. That being said, Jolly has a propensity to kind of hang out in boxing and clinch range, which is where Roundtree makes his money, as I see him getting the finish. All right. Let's move forward. We have next, I believe, is it Alex Moreno, Nico Price? That's what it's listing on Five Dimes, where I'm pulling my odds, mind you. But yes, yeah, that is the Fight Pass headliner for UFC as well. We have Alex Moreno versus Nico Price. I don't know what the opener odds were, but this, I believe, might be my only dog pick of the card. Maybe not, but possibly the only. I have Alex Moreno here over Nico Price. Nico Price still has a lot to show us, as he could very, very well show me wrong here, as this is second. Yes, Roundtree and Jolly was the first. This is the second on the fights to avoid list, if you're looking at mixedmartialanalyst.com. My breakdown there. Moreno, though, I just feel his activity and grit and durability is kind of outlasts him here. Price is good, although only a purple belt. He shows a good process and composure. Perhaps it's the 9-0 amateur listing that he credits himself, although it is not listed on a lot of the sites that I kind of go by officially. It makes sense, though, because Nico Price has a process. However, that process is from topside. And say what you will about Moreno, even though Moreno self-admittedly lacks the wrestling that would, let's be honest, help his game immensely, he has the scrambling ability against bigger guys, competent guys, as we saw, that if he can't get a submission, I think he can, at the very least, create a scramble against Nico Price and get himself out of danger, if not, maybe sway later in the rounds, because we don't really know what Nico Price looks like in later rounds, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, I believe he only has one fight that's gone to the distance, or at least in the third round region. So we don't know. He's kind of Amelia Earhart in those ranges still. We still have a lot to learn. That's why, again, this is on my avoid, but If you're looking for an underdog, I would say Morono, but I'm not that confident in it, and I'm not the only one feeling Morono, because now he's up to even money, currently at five dimes. Twas the night before the weigh-ins, all was quiet for the night, and we were done with the fight pass, and on to Tisha Torres versus Beck Rawlings. Big fan of Tisha Torres, was on her against Rose, although if I was really up to more of the current events, I really should have listened to the flags, because Tisha was kind of finishing up some grad school and her continuing education, or I should say just a degree, I believe it was a master's. I don't know what, because it is irrelevant, because she is done now, and that is the important part. And although I'm actually one that I will actually not wave the flag of Beck Rawlings, but halt the hate. That is much more fair to say. Beck Rawlings is not just one of the bigger strawweights by a stretch, and I don't mean that as a bad, I mean that as a positive. She actually has some decent boxing that people don't give credit for. You know, her upper hook, her slip to uppercut, you know, hook combinations and flows. Sorry if it's late. As you're used to in the Protect Your Neck podcast, it's like I almost need to do it sleep deprived now, or either that I'm just slowly, you know, discovering that I'm sleep deprived. Maybe I'll just be Christian Bale from The Machinist and there is no podcast at all. This is all in my head. But until then, I will continue to break down fights. And Beck Rawlings is underrated, although I don't have her winning this fight. Essentially, her forward pressure is not what I favor against Tisha's lateral movement that she does really well. She kind of does the Holly Holm where she'll use sidekicks to kind of disrupt distance, disrupt opponent's offense while resetting her angle and feeling her exits to the left side. She can switch stances with competency, get a takedown and change levels nicely, and also, more importantly, when needed. Again, she wasn't able to do a lot against Rose, at least as she normally does. And credit to Rose. I mean, Rose, speaking of switch stances, Rose shifts deceptively well and shifts deceptively well going backwards as she'll throw, you know, like check hooks and stuff like that. Long story short, I see Tisha's style getting it done here. This is kind of an overplay. I don't see either girl. Both girls are tough, veteran savvy, so I'm not sure about a finish. But Tisha Torres is a decision. There's a couple different angles you want to take it, but I listed Torres as a recommended parlay piece as I am confident in her here. All right, the next fight is going to be Michinori Tanaka versus Ricardo Lucas Ramos. By the way, Rawlings is plus 240, sizable underdog if you're a fan of betting underdogs against female fights, because female fights can be like flyweight or heavyweight fights. There's coin flippery. Just to keep it short. All right, Ricardo Lucas Ramos is the underdog looking for a fight prospect who was a legacy prospect who kind of had one falter, his only falter thus far in his young career. He comes at a underdog plus 150 to Michinori Tanaka minus 170. Essentially, Ramos is way more upside, but this fight he should be the underdog because I see Tanaka winning and I see the odds and chances about accurate here. That's why Tanaka is not a recommended parlay piece. He is very much at your own risk. This is kind of see how Ramos does. Not only is he a UFC debutant, which is a flag in its own, but he is really wild. And we saw that wildness get taxed already. So this is where I would usually say, you know, warn him about getting taxed here, but we've already seen him get taxed. What I will warn is that the judo styling, there's a lot of criticism coming on the judo. But there's one thing about judo is that it stifles, okay? We can say things about guys translating their striking or grappling or this or that, judo players, quote-unquote, but it stifles. Guys stifle very well. Japanese grapplers, you could say Japanese fighters, you know, don't do well transferring over, but at the very least, they do well stifling, and Tanaka does that. He's very athletic. He's one of these crossover guys, like his boy, Tsuruto Ishihara, who I believe is cornering him here. Who went to train with Team Alpha Male, so they kind of, you know, got to really brush up on their submission defense with guys looking to take their neck off every chance and every scramble they can. And Tanaka proved that, not only against Hanayaya, who is, you know, even though he lost the decision, the fact that he was able to defend the arm triangle in the beginning and other things, but even Joe Soto, who I didn't think get enough credit, much less for his grappling, you know, two very talented black belts in their own right, right there. I think he can stifle and that can, you know, stifle them. And not only that, that kind of control, that top control kind of positioning, that smothering, stifling style is what's best for a guy like Ramos, who's going to be as impressive as his transitions are from, you know, a back mount to an arm bar and so on and so forth. You want a veteran guy who's going to be deceptively strong and deceptively stifling, and that man is Tanaka. And minus 170, I agree, the favorite. I think he's going to come through here. All right. Next match, Chaz Skelly versus Gutschmacher, who we'll just call him Shoemaker, because, yeah, he looks like a shoemaker. No, he doesn't look like a shoemaker, Dan. That's cruel. Get creative, will ya? Anyways, Gutschmacher, Gooch Tickler, whatever. All right, let's stop, Dan. It's late. Let's stop. Give the guy a break. You're already picking against him. Yes, I am a Chaz Skelly mark. Yes, there are some flags against maybe Skelly if you look at, you know, the training split with back Black Zillion. A lot of them went with CSMMA. I'm not sure if he's still training there. Hope he is, because CSMMA has my former coach Neil Melanson, who I felt was a great fit, who Chaz Skelly had great feedback on. And sure enough, Chaz Skelly comes out in the first round of his last fight and hits a Darce choke. I know I tweeted out Anaconda at the time this happened and caught heat for it. That was my dyslexia, I blame. Not only am I competent to decipher which one is which, but this was a finish off the back that is unaccustomed is a word that I'm going to use because I'm, you know, it's late again, but what's the word that I really want to use? Let's just go not common, okay? Let's use common folk term and say it's not common. But it was common to me because I made many trips to Alliance after Neil left Extreme Couture when Neil was there at Alliance at Main San Diego before Black Zillions, which, you know, no more now, I guess. But I remember seeing in a private session and kind of jumping in on it and getting the technique breakdown, although sadly I only had one lesson with him on this, but the lesson was intended for Phil Davis. And Phil Davis was actually working this exact choke, and Neil started drilling it to a lot of the pros in class. And it was kind of great because you see, you know, you would see a Vicente Luque, another Black Zillions guy, Luta Livre, which is kind of a form of catch wrestling in South America. So it translated really well, took on a Neil style. He applied it. And yes, Chaz Skelly, not just a wrestler, but more that funk style wrestling, awkward. His styling, because he is a submission, he is thirsty for the submissions, translated really well with Neil. And he hit that on Maximo Blanco. It looks like he's doing a lot of his training at the second of the aforementioned Black Zillion split. That is Combat Club with Henry Hooft, who I'm a huge fan of as well. I haven't touched base with Neil, so I'm not sure anything there. Not that I would share it here, because there's a certain line that I do not cross, even if I did know things going on with that camp. But a big fan of Henry Hooft. Again, don't have bad things to say about either side, so irrelevant, neither here nor there. Skelly definitely could use some sharpening on his stand-up. No offense, Skelly. Love you, bud. Yeah, so glad he is sticking with the Hoofmaster. Skelly is probably one of the more stronger pieces for the parlay. I think this is a setup in Texas for him to look good. No offense to Gutschmacher, who, by the way, MMA Lab, like, did they piss off a matchmaker? Because they have been, like, underdogs, I swear, in the last 20 fights. It's fair to say a majority of the last 20 fights of UFC-level competitors coming from their camp. Anyways, Gutschmacher, not much to say. You know, he's a grinder. Jack of all trades, master of none, but even though Skelly, you know, showed, you know, fading propensities in his Darren Elkins fight, this is not the kind of, guy where Gutschmacher is going to kind of, capitalize on. And that was terrible. I mean, there's team takedown disarray was at a height. So when Chaz Skelly said he had a bad camp for Elkins, I tend to believe him. That guy didn't seem to make excuses too much. His vocal is justified, and so is the line, which is in the range of minus 260 now, I believe. I got it in the low 200s when it opened and just kind of parlayed it hard and heavy. Played the submission prop. Submission prop, Skelly, plus 160, one unit. All right. And now the last one of the FS1 prelims is Curtis Blaydes versus Adam Milstead. Blaydes is a big favorite here, and for a heavyweight, it can be kind of sketchy when they're big favorites, but he's not that big of a favorite. And in fact, even if Blades was a little bigger favorite, he's in the minus 270 range, I believe, now. Not too far from the opener, but even if he was in the minus 300, you could make the argument, and I'm a fan of Adam Milstead. Curtis Blades, I'm a fan of his, though, too. I actually picked Blades against Ngannou, and even though he lost, I still stand by it. I went back and watched Blades' NCAA footage before that fight with Ngannou, and I was really impressed. I mean, he was an aggressive wrestler. He's more of a takedown-style wrestler, to put in more blunt terms, for those, you know, who don't watch wrestling regularly, which, you know, up until I started doing this, I didn't myself too often, to be honest, so... But Blades is definitely a standout, and that is his athleticness, his urgency, his aggressiveness as a, not just a heavyweight, a big heavyweight. You know, he shows the good signs as far as durability, mental fortitude. I'm glad that fight was stopped when it was against Ngannou. Blades has a bright future. He is still young. His durability and attitude could get him into trouble, so it's nice to see doctors, corners, etc. step in. Whatever the case may be, it was a doctor in that case. I like Blades here. You know, he came back nicely against Cody East. And again, Milstead is one of those dudes. He has those athletic intangibles. That being said, he is a bit tight and jerky. I think that's just because he really shows that I think it comes from the athletic competitive drive. I mean, this is a guy that I believe played a lot of sports as well growing up, and he really kind of wants to show you who's who. And I kind of got a soft spot for Milstead because his first fight, and I believe his only fight against De La Rocha. That was at the Garbrandt Almeida card in Vegas, which was here, and I was there actually. And shout out to Gorgeous George and Ghost from MMA Junkie. They hooked me up with tickets. I went with them in a nice little viewing box there. Hung out with my man Stitch Duran. Shout out to Stitch. And afterwards, I don't even know who had the booth. It was one of those like eye candy, some kind of random whatever. I live in Vegas and I'm fucking terrible at knowing what the clubs and all that stuff is called. But yeah, I believe it was eye candy or whatever, what have you. And yeah, we had a, I don't know who was paying for it, but we had like drink service. They were treating us nice, probably because like Stitch and all that was with us, and Herb Dean and his lady, very, very nice people. Both of them came and joined us, and not trying to name drop there, but it's funny because we were hanging out with more like refs than officials, right? It wasn't like fighters, but you kind of saw like Jeremy Stevens, who just kind of had a big win against Barao, make his way over there. It was, you know, for his after party. And it was cool because you kind of saw him and Cub Swanson. Maybe they didn't see each other for a minute, but it was cool to see. They were kind of cool and they kind of had a moment. But more importantly, like Adam Milstead, I mean, he did fight early on the card, but he must have got a head start in his drinking because he was partying with five really nice looking ladies. And the reason why I know I'm not outing my man, despite it, you know, I don't know if he's got a girlfriend or something, you know, back home, but his girlfriend was with him, so they were all kind of just having a good time. This dude was just dancing and just going like, what's the heavyweight male version of White Girl Wasted? I don't know, but that was Adam Milstead that night, and it was awesome. And it's funny because like all these fighters, like you know, Adam Milstead, or like we saw Cisco Rivera earlier that night, and you see fans like freaking out when they see these guys and stuff. And I get it. It's like fans or whatever. That's not really my thing, whether it's like movie stars or actors or fighters, not really my thing, but I totally get that. I'm not hating on it, but it's funny because you see these fighters and they freak out over guys like Stitch Duran, like Stitch. Like that's the great thing. Like walking around somewhere with Stitch, you will see fighters like freak the fuck out over him. And it's awesome. And it's well-deserved. Stitch is a really nice guy behind the scenes for those of you, who don't know. And yeah, Milstead was doing the same thing. You know what? I'm going to leave parts of this story out, but it was classic. He was like straight up Will Ferrell mode, and I don't really know if he realized he was, and the things he was kind of trying to get Stitch's nod of approval and literal high fives on. It was quite a night to remember. So I will always have a soft spot for Adam Milstead. Not enough to play him, even at the comeback that he's getting at a plus 230 as a heavyweight. If you are going to play him, I don't blame you for doing a sprinkle there, but I think Curtis Blade takes this, okay? And wow, 23 minutes, 53 seconds, not bad. Sorry for repeating the time like a timestamp. I'm honestly not rushing, but I do need to refill my drink, so if you have to refill your drink, do so now. We're going to take a break and come back with our breakdown of the main card for UFC Houston right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast.
Cucarachas enojadas.
Right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast with yours truly for the UFC Houston main card breakdown. First up on the main card is a fight that arguably could or even should be the co-main event, as it is Jessica Andrade versus Angela Hill. Now, stated bias, if you read the full disclosure, there on my breakdown, I actually was privy to some of Andrade's training sessions and even, I dare say, some strategy and concepts of hers going forward. So I didn't want to speak too much on this fight out of respect. I try to keep an ethical line there. And I also, more importantly, wanted to let you know that, yes, my analysis, my opinion, and my plays are going to be biased here. Jessica Andrade is the third parlay piece or recommended parlay piece you can kind of shuffle into your own parlays. She is, you know, one of the safer ones whenever I have recommended parlay pieces, in case you don't know, for my breakdowns or going forward and any, you know, potential betting articles coming out. Those are not necessarily parlay them all together, although I do put my money where my mouth is. Those are pieces, as in, you know, pieces you can insert into your own parlays, because we all have different opinions, and I'm not telling you where to put your money, but I am serving as a reference, and I do take that role seriously, so that's what I recommend. And when I say avoid, obviously it means avoid. Props, well, you get where I'm going there. Just wanted to clarify on that. Now that the biases are stated, Jessica Andrade, I believe, opens somewhere in the neighborhood of the 400s, but has climbed her way to a current minus 525 on Five Dimes, where the comeback on Angela Hill as the underdog is plus 415. Don't blame you for wanting to take Angela Hill here. Again, female fights tend to be like flyweight fights and heavyweight fights, which are the outcomes seem to shuffle. The coin flippery seems to constantly be afoot. But I feel good about Andrade here. All bias aside, as I state in the breakdown, I genuinely feel she's a dark horse, not just in the division, but yes, to take the crown of Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And if she makes a statement here, she could. And, you know, you're banking on her to make a statement. Well, why put her by decision? Well, I guess you could say that has part to do with the bias. But also, bias aside, I believe Angela Hill is a bit underrated. She is not the same fighter she left the UFC as, you know. Moving to Alliance MMA, it was kind of unfair, you know. Her first fight, and she was only maybe, I don't even believe she had the full training camp in against Rose Namajunas at Alliance MMA, but that was her first official camp there. Since then, though, she's kind of inherited trademarks from her stablemates, such as Dominic Cruz, obviously not as good. But as far as, you know, the dips go, you know, she's using those dips, you know, and feints and fakes to kind of instigate exchanges where she can kind of return, use her length, or come over the top cross when they enter in a clinch space. Obviously, that's always kind of been her moneymaker. She has a very nice Muay Thai record, as I kind of note on my breakdown there on mixedmartialanalyst.com. Probably my 13th time plugging it. I'm sorry to have it. I listed there. And so I don't blame you for playing her. And it's hard to come up with an angle because Andrade needs a statement. I know she will be going for a statement. But it may take her a little bit longer to corral Hill, who, without a doubt, her number one priority, her wrestling techniques, which they have improved from the clinch and takedown defense and her framing and all that good stuff, I guarantee you, she's not even going to want to let it get to there, obviously. Angela Hill's smart. She's going to know her footwork is her first line of defense, and she's going to weigh heavily into that. So I think it may take a little longer than expected, which makes over-unders dangerous to play in this woman fight. Over is usually safe to play. I don't blame you for, you know, playing it here. I stick to what I said. You know, Andrade by decision. But if you read the breakdown, a lot of people kind of just will read that intent or read the outcome, you know. And I get it, man. I get it. You know, when I'm putting down 1,000 to 1,500 words on a technical breakdown, I understand that I'm only playing to a small audience, but I do that with pride. And that being said, whether you want to read it or not, if you do read it, you will see that although the official pick is by decision, I emphasize a strong late possibility of a late finish. So be on the lookout for that, for Andrade, but she is definitely the pick. Okay, so the next fight after that is going to be, I believe, Anthony Hamilton versus Marcel Fortuna, who has been super inactive but had a recent stint, although self-admittedly did not watch on a recent Ultimate Fighter series. Fortuna, although not a small man, he's very athletic, which I believe will compensate, which I believe is his biggest intangible in this fight, which is why I'm not backing Hamilton as much as I should. Not just because it's heavyweights and one punch can change it. You figured that edge would kind of be taken off, considering Fortuna does most of his work as a half Gracie San Jose NorCal black belt on the ground. Still yet, it's his athletic intangibles, I think, that kind of make this weird, because Anthony Hamilton, let's forget, he's bigger. He, despite getting freak Kimura'd by Ngannou, is competent on the ground. I mean, this is something, this is an area that he's worked hard, not just worked hard, and anybody can work hard in any area, but his bulky, strong frame to where his natural kind of athletic tendencies and habits fall in line more favorably for, yes, Hamilton definitely should have an edge in the grappling. Or I should say if he gets on top in the grappling, but yeah, I have a weird feeling about this one. That's why I didn't put it on any parlay pieces, much less, you know, just play it in general. I believe if you feel good about Hamilton, he's coming at a 190. That's kind of a reasonable price, whereas you get a plus 165 comeback on Fortuna. I don't know about that. Yeah, I believe this one on my stay away? Let's see. Yeah, it is on my stay away. I was going to say, if it's not on my stay away, it should be, but as fate would have it, yes, it is on my stay away. Marcel Fortuna, Anthony Hamilton. Let's move on from that dumpster fire to a slightly less palpable fire. Maybe a fire in an office, one of those little trash bins, you know, like in the movie when they're trying to get away evidence. Let's forget about my... let's forget about that. I'm getting off track here. Volkan Ozdemir. I usually pronounce things better, but I am not today. We could even call it old-timer if we want to go with the offensive nomenclature against Ovince St. Preux, who is coming in a strong minus 340. I believe Ovince opened. I don't have the opener, so I'm only going off my head, but I believe Ovince opened in the neighborhood of the minus 200s as far as the favorite realm, whereas Volkan, I'm not sure even to venture what his opener was, but he is coming back right now at a plus 280. I don't blame you for taking a shot here, because again, I get a weird vibe. Maybe that's because of, you know, a lot of times the fickleness of MMA fans can even be portrayed in the odds makers and educated pundits, right? I'm not beyond it, definitely. That's for sure. However you want to cut that. And perhaps it's OSP's last bad performance that is making us kind of doubt him here. But I like him against Volkan. Even though Volkan gets a lot of submissions as well as knockouts, got a little bit of mix primarily by finish. And although I joke with the old-timer, he is far from it. His 31 is young for the divisions that he has been competing in, being, you know, heavyweight and light heavyweight. I don't like how Volkan moves. It's a bit choppy at best. Well, not at best. It's a bit choppy, okay? And again, he is kind of training in between camps at the CSM Main Combat Club. He's kind of caught in the middle of that Black Zillion split. But not only that Black Zillion split, but he was reportedly getting ready for a heavyweight fight. So, I mean, there's just a lot of questions, a lot of inactivity with Volkan. Flags all over the place, even if you want to take a shot at him. Plus 280, maybe not just tempting number, but tempting in comparison to the minus 340 for an OSP. But I feel OSP gets done. I have a sneaking suspicion OSP goes for the takedown. And, goes for a submission, because if striking gets sketchy with Volkan, who, although is choppy, when he is in stride, granted it's been a lot against a lot of low-level competition, he shows to put together his strikes well. I feel OSP has that backup of a takedown game to kind of lean back on. And if he gets swept or if things aren't going his way, he has a great get-up game that he can rely on, again, to kind of pull parachute, so to speak. I got OSP there. Let's move on. One of the fights I went in-depth on is it deserves it because the odds makers, pundits, fans alike are kind of torn on this. Except, I don't have a really strong opinion. I should take that back. I don't have a strong opinion. I believe it is close to a pick'em as it is minus 110 right now. James Vick versus Abel Trujillo is what I'm talking about. James Vick, wow. I believe this line is close because not so much, you know, I mean, Vic, you know, I was just speaking on it, right? Fickle memory, fickle fandom kind of bleeds through even to the pundits and whatnot. But I think the fact that Vic got tagged against Dariush and Dariush against the fence is what is troubling. Not more common minds, not more casual fans, but somewhere in that neighborhood, if you could find maybe more accurate and less offensive words than what I just used. The point is, Abel Trujillo makes his money in between the inner black octagon lines and the fence. If you follow my work, you're probably getting sick of that, but it's true. Certain guys make their money there. John Lineker, etc., etc. And Abel Trujillo is one of those guys. And the fact that not only, you know, James Vick kind of leaves himself upright, open for counters, and Abel Trujillo is a knockout puncher, which alone is justified caution for playing or calling this fight. But Vick kind of relies on that boxing footwork where, even though, despite being ridiculously stupid tall at 6'3 for 155, he moves deceptively well, pulls and returns, doesn't depend on the Diego Sanchez forward movement to earn himself scorecards, which is fine because, you know, hopefully judges in the sports are evolving as they stated they should be. You know, Vic makes his money at range, but apparently, and it has a tendency to kind of make him play the outside, which again, like I just said, which is where Trujillo makes his money. Hence, maybe the odds makers making this line close and the opinions close when you look at, again, what Beneil Dariush did just to Vic. But I believe Vic is going to come strong here. You know, he, again, shout out to my man Daniel Levy. I'm excited to hear his pick. I do subscribe to the podcast. I'm not bullshitting when I say that, but with breaking down fights and doing what I do, unfortunately, I can't listen to him, Robin Black, other buddies of mine, until after I break this kind of stuff down. But James Vick, you know, the reason why I bring up Daniel Levy's podcast is because James Vick kind of warned me on that podcast. He's been a guest maybe once or twice on there. I'm not sure. Again, I'm not kind of the best sample size. I can't listen to podcasts as much as I would like to, even the good ones. So regardless of the fact, James Vick really has that kind of competitive edge. He, you know, even though he kind of seems like a wild man in the spirit of his fighting style, he seems like a smart guy listening to him speak, and I think he knows what he needs to do here. Abel Trujillo, even though he's showing improvements under my former coach Neil Melanson there that I kind of spoke of earlier, his propensity to kind of like get wild in the feet that's got Abel countered, it carries over to the floor because when he makes space to, you know, do this ground and pound and stuff like that, he will also leave space for the scramble sometimes. So for his sake, I hope he, you know, sticks true and shows the improved techniques that he's been working under Neil. Because, again, with that split, Abel is one of the guys that looks like he's been sticking with CSMMA. That doesn't mean he's not working with Henry. Again, I don't know the issues or situation. Maybe issues not the best word to say. Situations there. But Abel, yeah, working more with Neil. So I have a feeling Abel is going to go more to the ground here, which is where he has a better chance of winning this fight. Hey, pardon me for a second. I'm going to take a sip of water. Sorry, if I didn't take a sip of water, it was like I was going to run out of fuel. It was like the old school Mission Impossible, the TV show, when I say old school, where it shows the fuse being lit. That's like what my mouth was like if I wasn't going to have water. I have, you know, hit it soon, so we're good now. Anyways, Trujillo, much as I could see why he's live here, I got James Vick. I think the volume and Trujillo's propensity to fade when things don't go his way or just when the fight progresses, you know, past the second round or deep into the second, I think Vick's volume and variety is going to pay dividends. He has some nice jabs. He variates the angles. He'll go to uppercuts when it's appropriate. You know, when his opponent's shelling, he will vary angles on his crosses as well, according to his opponent. A lot of things I like that James Vick does. Got the deceptive guillotine, which could, you know, kind of thwart, at least at the very least, maybe scare away Abel Trujillo's renowned kind of power double shot there. Don't think you should play this one heavily, but James Vick versus Killa Trujillo is on my official recommended props list. It doesn't go the distance because for minus 165, I think either of these guys are going to get a finish. Whether Trujillo lands an over the top on the upright head of James Vick or James Vick's volume overwhelms to a TKO or submission finish of Trujillo, it is hard to see this one going the distance as most gentlemen have a lot of finishes that are particularly in the first round. All right. Moving on. Felice Herrig versus Alexa Grasso for the co-main event. Alexa Grasso comes in as the minus 320 favorite. I don't believe she opened there at all, but she has certainly climbed herself there, as I believe she is a strong favorite here against Felice Herrig, who, again, I don't wave the flag of a Felice Herrig, but I certainly feel she's underrated. She's very strong in the clinch, has very good Muay Thai, and kind of has that experience intangible mixed with that wild intangible, but not with that wild intangible of like a young fighter, but, you know, wild intangible that she likes to party. And speaking of party, another sip of my little bourbon on the rocks here, which I may or may not have already mentioned earlier in the podcast. Ooh, that's good. I like Bullet. As mentioned, I like IPAs when it comes to beer, but whiskey, Bullet, bourbon is kind of my favorite. It goes with smoked meats very well. Shout out to Hunter Homestick from Flow Combat. I know he loves to smoke meats. Bullet bourbon goes great with that. I like whiskeys in general, usually scotches, Scottish whiskeys from Scottish Highlands. Always good stuff. You know, Oban 14, solid choice. One of my favorites. But Bullet bourbon is one of those, like, kind of Jameson options where you're going to find it, like, kind of hokey spots. So kind of always hits the spot. This is not a whiskey breakdown, but feel free. You don't have to use the hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast, by the way, the hashtag you use to participate in this podcast. You can just hit me up at the MMAnalyst. Tell me what you like for hard liquor if you think I'm way off track, or if you also like whiskey. What whiskey do you like? What bourbon? What scotch? Tell me. I care about these things almost as much as I care about Felice Herrig versus Alexa Grasso. Grasso, she shows really good improvements. Slowly but surely, the hype has worn on me. She's starting to slift, you know, slift. Wow, it's almost to the end of this thing, speaking of bourbon. She's starting to shift her head off center line, you know, kind of slipping her head, doing those uppercut, you know, hook continuums that I spoke of earlier. She throws, you know, surprisingly accurate spinning hook kicks, inside leg kicks and so forth. But as far as teep goes, even though she throws teeps are going to be Felice Herrig's best weapon. It's probably her best weapon standing. Grasso will still sometimes square her stance as she occasionally keeps her head upright. If Herrig can capitalize with overhands or teeps, that'll be her best chance as she is a sizable girl, even though she looks kind of scary making these cuts, even though she's improved her muscle. It's made these cuts scary. I do not like looking, at Felice Herrig's Instagram as much as I used to. You're going to take another break. Wow. For not another break, but another sip of water. Pardon moi. Grasso, though, on the other hand, shows some improved techniques in the clinch. Not only has she always been kind of active and throwing, you know, knees with impunity with deceptive leverage in tight spots, but she's also showing, you know, really good application and understanding of underhooks and overhooks, you know, how a high underhook works and how to use that and kind of circle off from a high underhook where she kind of almost hoists up with it. And I really like that, showing the small details, and if you're kind of getting to know my breakdown stylistic likings and dislikings, oh, you know the small details ring home with old Dan Tom. So Alexa Grosso definitely growing on me as, you know, maybe not playing straight up, but definitely parlay fodder. It's still a minus 195 for this fight goes the distance because Felice Herrig is deceptively well on the ground and deceptively durable on the feet. I don't see her getting put away. And, you know, furthermore, Grosso showed intelligence while she kind of let off the gas, although she was criticized for that in her Heather Jo Clark fight. I feel that's a good thing, especially for a young fighter. She shows that composure, so it kind of goes hand in hand with her honor, which doesn't fall into the fight game or the betting side, but, you know, martial artist like me appreciates that, and it shows to translate, show at least some relevance in the fact that she will step off the gas in favor of intelligence, which is not a bad thing. It will serve her well in the long run and possibly in the short run, as I see her. Another decision with possible late finish, but more strong side on the decision here because of, you know, again, Herrig's aforementioned durability. That said, if Herrig can get on top, more importantly, if Herrig can get on half guard, where she deceptively operates well, we will see Grosso's ground game tested furthermore. Although I wouldn't go so far as to say a suspect, still needs to show a lot more. So, hopefully, Herrig puts her in some positions to show that, but I got Grosso here. More importantly than the parlay fodder, I have Grosso for the official prop, as I have her by decision. You can still get her by a plus 105. That's what I have her by. You can still get that now from my recording time, Thursday night. All right, main event time. Chan Sung Jung versus Dennis Bermudez. Man, oh man. We're probably going to do top five featherweight wars eventually, but that's like one of the top fives I've actually posted for fun, just because. I love the featherweight division. And Chan Sung Jung and Dennis Bermudez can not only be found in mine and probably your top five, but they can both be found multiple times. They are that great. They are that great of risk takers, which makes even this fight, despite the long layoff for versus active fighter kind of moniker that's so typical and strong and factually correct and that I'm going by. Spoiler alert. That's what makes these fights exciting. That's what makes these fighter styles exciting. That's why they are, again, in our top five featherweight fights of all time, right? Chan Sung Jung versus Korean Zombie. How about the underrated, like, one of my top five of all time next to, you know, especially next to underrated, Yves Jabouin, Mark Hominick, but Matt Grice versus Dennis Bermudez. Man, shout out to Matt Grice. That guy's overcome a lot. Good to see him cornering. But that fight, wow. Do yourself a favor if you're a Fight Pass subscriber. Go to Matt Grice versus Dennis Bermudez. Subscribe to that. We have Dennis Bermudez coming in at the favorite at minus 200. I believe he opened in the neighborhood of minus 160. And we have Chan Sung Jung as a minus 170. I believe I want to say he opened in the neighborhood of a plus 140, as he should, coming off of 42 months of inactivity, is Chan Sung Jung. What can I say? Chan Sung Jung, he really, another guy that kind of comes to life, the zombie comes to life when his opponent, he can corral them between the inner black octagon lines and cage. You know, he will vary his levels up to bottom, kind of left to right in a more sloppily flow than Dominic Cruz, if that's even a word. I'm going with it at this point of the night. But Dennis Bermudez is a little more of a process, showing better combinations, not just better combinations, but even though Dennis tends to get dropped, he actually has been showing better head movement, rolling off of his twos to the right side as he throws his twos from the right, being an orthodox fighter, often punctuating with his leg kicks. Man, I like a lot to like about Dennis Bermudez. Good and dirty boxing range with his knees and uppercuts. That being said, Dennis Bermudez tends to load heavily on his front foot, as Jeremy Stephens most brilliantly noted on his post-fight speech after knocking him out with a flying knee. Well, speaking of flying knees, who has a deceptively accurate and potent one? Yes, that is Chan Sung Jung, the Korean Zombie, does. That will be a strike to look for, and so will the counter right hand. I say counter because, again, we talk about offense for both guys, especially the Korean Zombie, but maybe not WEC so much, but upon the Zuffa UFC entry, the Korean zombie Chan Sung Jung showed a more measured approach to his striking, showing a counter more. He hit a very opportunistic, the most opportunistic you could argue, being that it was in the first 10 seconds of the fight against Mark Hominick. To shout out to Jordan. Shout out to Jordan Killian, who loves saying things, and Matt Damon, Goodwill Hunting / Boston accents. Every time you say Mark Hominick, can't not say it in a Boston accent for Mark Hominick. Unfortunately, rest in peace, Sean Tompkins, who was grateful enough to have a couple classes under Extreme Couture. Mark Hominick's career kind of dissipated after the great, late, great Sean Tompkins dissipated. And, why did I have to touch on that? But, yeah, Mark Hominick lost that fight as we saw him countered by the Korean zombie, who showed he has a counter acumen of his own. Despite that counter acumen, I am going with Dennis Bermudez. I just see his overall process playing out here. You really can't, from an analyst's point of view, over 1 year off, much less, 42 months with the Korean zombie being off. That said, I'm not playing Bermudez, though officially picking him by decision. Because if Chan Sung-jun is going to win, it's not by decision. And not even by the aforementioned TKO of a Mark Hominick. It is by submission, which, by the way, you can get right now for a fun flyer. Plus 450. That's what I got it for. That's where the line still holds. Chan Sung-jung by submission. Because I believe he can hurt the aforementioned droppable Dennis Bermudez. But he tends to pick up the pieces and clean up hit with submissions. And whether Dennis Bermudez is hurt, getting back to his feet, or in a scramble, wrestlers tend to re-wrestle for shots. Or turtle to stand, which means they are in an inherent turtle position that gives their back. Now, giving their back, although we've seen some kind of aggressive back dates from Chan Sung Jung, he works particularly well from the front headlock, right? The Arce Bravo choke finish off of Dustin Poirier. And I was kind of referencing, all it takes is that 1 second to put down the pack, like we saw against Jason Gonzalez versus JC Cottrell on the last episode of the Protect Your Neck podcast, the After Party Edition, where I recap techniques. I touched on that there. That's all it takes is I mean, Dustin Poirier even more justifiably so, and even more briefly so than a JC Cottrell, put down that pack, took a break in the turtle position. And that's all it took for a Korean zombie to kind of adjust his grip and go for the finish there. So, yeah, that's going to be to look for anytime they scramble, anytime Bermudez looks to get back to his feet, or if he gets dropped and is hurt in the disarray, okay? Korean zombie only needs but a little bit to turn the tide. So the submission prop is live. I don't blame you for playing that nor the Korean zombie for the comeback odds, but I got Dennis the Menace Bermudez here. The safe play, of course, is just enjoying and sitting back in what could be a potential classic, given what I said. I mean, these guys are in our top five featherweight wars, which I'll probably have to, with tweeting it, mentioning it now, talking about it now, probably talking about it in the post-fight show, which I hope you stay tuned for. Probably have to abandon any type of featherweight top fives for a minute. But yeah, without a doubt, both men deserving in the top five, regardless of the outcome here. They should be deserving and respectable for you too. I believe I listed all the parlays, props, and avoids throughout this podcast. Anything you miss, you can re-listen. Subscribe on iTunes. Positive rate and reviews are favorable. This was kind of a last minute, so I don't blame the lack of participation. Again, as we're kind of getting started with the submissions and transition segment. But if you want to be mentioned, you want to have your handle announced if you're, not sociopathic, whatever, in yourself. God, I can't think of any words today. If you just dig that kind of stuff, or if you legitimately want technical questions answered, whether it's gaming or yes, about technique, just use the hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast. And I'll say it here in the submissions in transition segment, but we are going to make our way out of here. That is UFC Houston. We're going to see who makes weight and who doesn't tomorrow, because with these new weigh-ins, Fighters have a seemingly hard time adjusting by doing their weight cuts at night. As I've kind of spoke on before, I think this is kind of hindering us. It's going to at the very least, if it's a positive, take an adjustment period first. So we will see tomorrow what goes on then. Tomorrow I'll actually be meeting with my man. Hashtag 3026 breakdown is the display name, but at John's Crazy Life, John Lee. Subscribe to his YouTube channel. I will be doing his podcast show, however he wants to call it. It's really creative. So what he does, how he kind of edits these interviews together, and he breaks down things that will be useful to you. If you're curious enough to listen to my ass ramble on, you should listen to this. Follow John on Twitter at John's Crazy Life. Subscribe to his YouTube channel, which is linked through his Twitter. He will be interviewing me about how I watch fights. That's what he does. He interviews a lot of people. His latest one was Sean Carey Tattoo at Sean Carey Tattoo. Again, who I was a big fan of since his days on At the MMA Analysis. Shout out to those guys too. I got love everywhere. I don't give a fuck, y'all. But Sean Carey Tattoo now on Half the Battle, where I'm a big fan of. Again, you should subscribe to. But some really great tidbits there. Again, Sean is a real angles guy, a real betting guy. But he's not solely that. I mean, he's not a as dependent as numbers for a lot of betting guys are. And he's also, on the flip side, a hardcore fan, has been watching a while. So John does a great job of breaking down Sean Carey through his channel. So go check that out. We'll see what he does with me tomorrow. We're going to go eat at a nice spot here in Vegas, because thankfully, my man John Lee is a Vegas local. So we're going to go meet tomorrow. There'll be more on that. There'll be an after party. Keep an eye out for my content coming out on Flow. Always stay tuned to MixedMartialAnalyst.com, where you can find the entirety of my work. And until next time, protect your neck.